Good morning. Hi, my name is Elaine Harris and I'm a member of this congregation. We have an open pulpit and I'm taking advantage of that today. So today's service is entitled The Songs We Sing. Before I start, let me welcome everybody here and let me just say, I don't think the web camera is working today, but anyone that is listening in or listening to recordings, you're very welcome. You're welcome if it's your first time here or your 101st time here. We're delighted to see you all. For my opening words, I use the words of Kenneth Patton, who was a UU minister in New Jersey. This house is for the ingathering of nature and human nature. It's a house of friendships, a haven in trouble, an open room for the encouragement of our struggle. It's a house of freedom, guarding the dignity and worth of every person. It offers a platform for the free voice, for declaring both in times of security and danger, the full and undivided conflict of opinion. It's a house of truth-seeking, where scientists can encourage devotion to their quest, where mystics can abide in a community of searchers. It's a house of art, adorning its celebrations with melodies and handiworks. It's a house of prophecy, outrunning times past and times present, in visions of growth and progress. This house is a cradle for our dreams, the workshop of our common endeavor. So we're going to do something slightly different with the chalice lighting today. I'm going to read the chalice lighting words, and then as I light the chalice, we are going to sing the first hymn. That is 159, This Is My Song. So for the chalice lighting, the words I've chosen are, in the mystery of life, about us there is light. It gives us a place to be, to grow, to rejoice together. It opens the pathways to love. In this place of friendship, there is freedom. Let the light we kindle go before us, strong in hope, wide in goodwill, inviting the day to come. Our reader today is Janet.
Morning, everybody. This story or tale needs very little introduction. It's simple and it's straightforward, and I think it's quite lovely. It's from a book called Spiritual Literacy by Frederick and Mary Ann Brossett. It's a little tale about a blacksmith. Once upon a time, there was a blacksmith who worked very hard at his trade. The day came for him to die. The angel was sent to him, and much to the angel's surprise, he refused to go. He pleaded with the angel to make his case before God, that he was the only blacksmith in the area, and it was the time for all his neighbours to begin their planting and sowing. He was very much needed. So the angel pleaded his case before God. He said that the man didn't want to appear ungrateful and that he was very glad to have a place in the kingdom, but could he please put off going for a while? And he was left. About a year or two later, the angel came back with the same message. The Lord was ready to share the fullness of the kingdom with him. Again, the man had reservations and said, "A neighbor of mine is seriously ill, and it is time for the harvest. A number of us are trying to save his crops so that his family won't become destitute. Please, could you come back later?" And off the angel went again. Well, it got to be a pattern. Every time the angel came, the blacksmith had one excuse or another. The blacksmith would just shake his head and tell the angel where he was needed and gratefully decline. Finally, the blacksmith grew very old, very weary, and very, very tired. He decided it was time, and so he prayed. "God, if you'd like to send your angel again, I'd be glad to come home now." Immediately, the angel appeared, as if from around the corner of the bed. The blacksmith said, "If you still want to take me home, I'm ready to live forever in the kingdom of heaven." And the angel laughed and looked at the blacksmith in delight and surprise and said, "Where do you think you have been all these years?" He was home.
I don't think there's any children in here today, so you get to listen to this story, which is equally applicable to everybody here. And sometimes I think the children's story means more to us than it does to the kids anyway. What I chose today for the children's story is a poem, and it's from Dr. Zeus. And the reason that I chose it today was that kids are coming to the end of their school year and they're moving on to the next phase. And sometimes that's very exciting and sometimes it's very scary. And it's okay for it to be both. And this is an extract from a poem that's read a lot of times at graduations, from kindergarten or from sixth class or even from sixth year. But you know what? I think it applies to us all. So take it in the spirit that it's given, please. Oh, the places you'll go. Congratulations, today is your day. You're off to great places, you're off and away. You've brains in your head, you've shoes on your feet. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. You're on your own and you know what you know, and you are the guy who'll decide where you go. You look up and down streets, look them over with care. About some you will say, "I don't choose to go there." With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not so good street. And you may not find any you'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town. It's opener there in the wide open air. Out there, things can happen and frequently do to people as brainy and footsy as you. And then things start to happen. Don't worry, don't stew. Just go right along, you'll start happening too. Oh, the places you'll go, there's fun to be done. There's points to be scored, there are games to be won. And the magical things that you can do with that ball will make you the winningest winner of all. Fame, you'll be as famous can be, and the whole wide world will watch you win on TV. Except when they don't, because sometimes they won't. I'm afraid that sometimes you'll play lonely games too, games you can't win, because you'll play against you. All alone, whether you like it or not, alone will be something you'll be quite a lot. And when you're alone, there's a very good chance you'll meet things that scare you right out of your pants. There are some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. But on you will go, though the weather be foul. On you will go, though your enemies prowl. On you will go, though the hacking cacks howl. Onward, up many a frightening creek, though your arms may get sore and your sneakers make leak. On and on you will hike, and I know you'll hike far and face up to your problems, whatever they are. You'll get mixed up, of course, as you already know. You'll get mixed up with many strange birds as you go. So be sure when you step with care and great tact, and remember that life's a great balancing act. Just never forget to be dexterous and deft, and never mix up your right foot with your left. And will you succeed? Yes, you will. Yes, indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. For the second hymn, we are going to sing hymn number 207, "Earth Was Given as a Garden." For my reading, I'm choosing a passage from a book called "The Chairs Are Where the People Go: How to Live, Work and Play in the City" by Misha Glauberman with Sheila Hetty. I don't really know much about Misha Glauberman, except that he's a performer, facilitator and artist who lives in Toronto. This book is just a collection of I suppose, his thoughts and sometimes his advice. It's very low-key advice, but it's interesting. I can't say it's changed my life reading it, but it's something that I found quite interesting, and it's an easy read as well. So I'm reading the one called Social Music because I think it ties in with what I want to say in my address. Over the past 100 years or so, music has become much less a social experience for a lot of people. Music used to be something you did, something you made with people around you. Now, for many people, it's something made by skilled professionals you've never met, that you listen to as a largely passive audience, often at a substantial spatial and temporal distance from the performance. Don't get me wrong, I love the present-day mediascape. I'm not calling for a return to the good old days. I think it's amazing that we all have instant access to a universe of music all the time. But there's also something exciting about the dimension of music that's social, that's about making it together. I run a series called Terrible Noises for Beautiful People, which is pretty much all about the question, what sorts of aesthetically interesting experiences can you give to an audience by having them choose sounds and make sounds together, rather than by having them listen to sounds chosen by and made by someone else? Some of the terrible noise events are structured as classes. Some are more like participatory events, performances where all the sounds are made by the audience. During these events, people are able to derive a lot of aesthetic pleasure from the very simplest group exercises. You get a room full of people, and you ask them to close their eyes and make and hold a vowel sound together. And you know what? It sounds amazing. I mean, it's the most boring, unmusical sound you can imagine. A couple of dozen people holding an unpitched drone. But when you're in it, when you are doing it with the people, it can be very beautiful and very interesting. There's lots of reasons for this, but the one I'm most interested in is that people have so little opportunity to enjoy the social component of music that doing an exercise like this stimulates a part of our musical enjoyment that's really underused, the part that just enjoys making sounds with other people. I'm really interested in weaving the social and the musical together. I do a game called Converge Diverge, where people move towards a unison where everyone is making the same sound, then move back out towards increased difference, then move back in again towards convergence. The challenge of that piece is not only musical, it's social. How can a large group of people collectively choose a single sound to make? It's a hard thing to do. And it calls into question all kinds of things about leadership, compromise, listening, and individuality. Tension and resolution are basic ideas in music. If someone sings half a melody and stops in the middle, even if you've never heard that melody before, you'll know that that's not the end and it will sound dissatisfying. You'll know this because we have a set of rules about tension and resolution in music that mostly have to do with harmonic movement. A musical piece moves to a place of tension, which feels unstable and incomplete, then to resolution, which feels satisfying and done. In the converge-diverge piece, tension in the game happens as disagreement, and resolution happens as agreement. Since the piece is meant to be listened to by the people who are playing the game, when you hear the sonic component of agreement or disagreement, you are also simultaneously experiencing it on a social level. I think the interaction between those levels, between social interactions and the way you hear and create those sounds, is complicated and exciting and mysterious. As we come into a moment of reflection, I'd invite you to join with me in reading 558 in the hymn book, please. This is Ecclesiastes. So if you wouldn't mind, can you read the pieces in the italics? For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven.
A time to be born, a time to die.
A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted.
A time to kill, a time to heal.
a time to break down and a time to build up. A time to mourn and a time to dance.
A time to throw away stones, a time to gather stones together.
A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing.
A time to sleep and a time to lose.
A time to keep and a time to throw away.
A time to dare and a time to sow.
A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time for war. As we come into a few moments of silence and reflection, let us pause and reflect on what we just read. My address today is titled The Songs We Sing. It was a germ of an idea that had been floating around my head for a while, and then I heard Jennifer Buller's service on the theology of Joni Mitchell, and it really inspired me. If you have a chance, go back and listen to the recording of her service. You really won't regret it. For this address, I deliberately chose to focus on what I thought would be a nice light topic to offer a little light relief in the difficult times that we're going through. But the more I worked on it, the more I realised that the songs we sing are not just a silly distraction from the more important things of life, but they allow us opportunities for both self-expression and to foster community spirit, cementing community ties in a way that little else can. Think about how you feel at a gig of your favourite singer or band and you're all singing along to the favourite song of theirs, or being at a match in Croke Park, well, except yesterday if you're a Dub, or the Aviva Stadium, singing the national anthem, or the Fields of Athenry, or your county song, or when you hear the parting glass or going home sung at a wake or a funeral, or even here in church when you're belting out your favourite hymn. In doing some of the background reading for this address, I came across the following joke. Why are Unitarians so bad at singing? Because they're always reading ahead to see if they agree with the lyrics. Yeah, hit home for me too. And that perfectly captures my happily complicated relationship with many of our hymns, and perhaps even with this community. Sometimes I feel at harmony with or moved by the hymns, the readings, the addresses. And at other times I hear a discordant note or word and I bristle and feel uncomfortable and a little disturbed. And you know what? That is how it should be. In every sense of the words, we are a broad church with an open, welcoming pulpit. We can and should be expected to be both comforted and challenged by what we experience here. I can't remember where I first heard it, but there's probably some truth in the description of Unitarians as atheists who like hymns. And one of my favourite musicians is Tim Minchin, who captures this feeling well in his song White Wine in the Sun, with lyrics, "I get freaked out by churches, but some of the hymns they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are dodgy." So for the rest of this address, I'd like to take you on a trip through some of the songs we sing as Unitarians, dodgy lyrics and all. In this church, we have two hymnals we use, the older, smaller blue one, and the one we're using today, Singing in the Living Tradition. It was first published in 1993 by the Hymn Book Resources Commission of the UUA, and it was meant to be a more inclusive book that was inclusive both in terms of gender references and multicultural sources, and also used a wider number of religious inspirations. The hymns are helpfully split up by subject, such as theme, so commitment and action, love and compassion, hope, freedom, justice, stewardship of the earth, etc. Time, so morning or evening, seasons, harvest, solstice, equinox. Origins, so music, cultures of the world, words from the sacred traditions, the Jewish spirit, the Christian spirit, and different holidays, so Kwanzaa, Passover, Hanukkah, Advent, Christmas, Easter. And for specific services or parts of services, so entrance songs, chalice lightings, weddings, memorials, and funerals and recessionals. There's hundreds of hymns in the hymnal, many of which have wonderful stories associated with them. So I'm just going to take you through a couple of my favorites. The first one I'm going to look at is among the most well-known, Amazing Grace. And it's a firm favorite with many people, exploring themes of redemption and hope. It was originally written in 1773 by John Newton as a New Year's reading to accompany his teaching on Chronicles chapter 17, verses 6 and 17. Then King David went in and sat before the Lord, and he said, "Who am I, Lord God, and what is my family that you have brought me this far? And as if that were not enough in your sight, my God, you have spoken about the future of the house of your servant. You, Lord God, have looked on me as though I were the most exalted of men." Now, Newton's an interesting character. He was the son of a merchant seaman whose devout mother died of tuberculosis when he was young. And following a brief spell in boarding school, he joined his father at sea. Although it seems he loved the sea, he was not so keen on the merchant life. He was shy and bookish, and he preferred to spend his time reading. He was then press-ganged into the British Navy, and after a few years of that brutal living, he eventually ends up serving on a slave trading ship where the malaria and outbreaks and harsh conditions break his spirit. One night in 1748, somewhere off the southwest coast of Ireland, his ship starts falling apart in a severe storm, and he sees some of his shipmates swept overboard. Terrified, Newton says when he's telling the story, the words appeared in his mouth, "If this will not do, the Lord have mercy on us." Somehow he survives the night, and Newton says that this was when he first encountered what he considered God's saving grace, the hour I first believed. Now, interestingly, that saving grace didn't affect his slave trading career, which he continued until 1755. Then, following a stroke, he returned to England, and for the last 30 years of his life, he became a hymn writer in Olney, Buckinghamshire. It wasn't until the 1780s that he became a vocal supporter of the abolitionist movement. He wrote this poem back, hymn back in 1755. There have been numerous articles and books on this hymn, not surprising given its popularity. And although the hymn is now associated with the abolitionist movement, Newton's writing of it preceded his abolitionist stance by almost a decade. By the early 1820s or 30s, the song had been adopted by slaves in the southern US states and in the Caribbean. And scholars now know that the last verse was not written by Newton, but it was believed it was added by slaves. And the first version that they can find written down is in Harriet Beecher Stowe's 1852 anti-slavery novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin. And the final verse is, "When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun." Next, I want to explore This Is My Song, which we've already sung today. It was by Lloyd Stone, set to Sibelius's Finlandia. Stone was born in California and attended the University of Southern California as a music major with the intention of becoming a teacher. Instead, and you couldn't make this up, he joined a circus bound for Hawaii and remained there for the rest of his life writing poems and songs. Stone wrote the verses we see in our hymnal in 1934 when he was only 22 years old. Sibelius wrote Finlandia at the end of the 19th century, a time of Russian expansionism and increased militarism. It soon became a very popular expression of Finnish patriotism, and in the 1920s, Sibelius allowed choirs to perform it with words added by, and I'm going to butcher this name, I'm really sorry, Veikko Antero Koskeniemi. I'm going to read you the words that Sibelius gave his imprimatur to. "Finland, behold, thy daylight now is dawning. The threat of night has now been driven away. The skylark calls across the light of morning. The blue of heaven lets it have its way. And now the day, the powers of night is scorning. Thy daylight dawns, O Finland of ours. Finland, arise and raise towards the highest, thy head now crowned with mighty memory. Finland, arise, for to the world thou criest that thou hast thrown off thy slavery. Beneath the oppression's yoke thou never liest. Thy mornings come, O Finland of ours." The version we know and love by Stone accompanying the wonderful Sibelius's tone poem was first sung in the interwar years of the 1920s and 30s. In other denominations, there's a third verse added that we don't tend to sing, and this one is by Georgia Elma Harkness, who was a Methodist theologian with a passion for poetry and the arts and a dream of global ecumenical Christianity. Her verse is as follows. "May truth and freedom come to every nation. May peace abound where strife has raged so long, that each may seek to love and build together a world united, righting every wrong. A world united in its love for freedom, proclaiming peace together in one song." I quite like that verse, but I'm not convinced that the addition is necessary, and I think the two that we sing here probably hold up very well on their own. Finally, I want to look at Come Sing a Song with Me, which we're going to end the service with, by Carolyn MacDade. I've always loved the simplicity of this hymn. It has an almost meditative quality, I think. I was very surprised when I went into reading about this that to learn that she not only did she write this hymn, but she's also the author of Spirit of Life, a hymn that's often chosen as the favorite one by many of our American UU cousins. And Spirit of Life has the following words: "Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion. Blow in the wind, rise in the sea, move in the hand, giving life the shape of justice. Roots hold me close, wings set me free. Spirit of life, come to me, come to me." Again, Carolyn has had a very interesting life path and is now in her 90s. After several decades involved with UU congregations, she no longer sees churches as part of her spiritual path. She says, "My community is a loose community of women. I call myself a woman of faith, seeking with others to touch what matters." She's been involved in a chain of linked politically progressive causes. She's actively opposed wars, South African apartheid, US foreign policy, nuclear power. She has worked for economic justice, environmental protection, and the rights of women, migrant workers, prisoners, refugees, and lesbians. I sought out her website to see to what she's up to now, and in it she is described as a lover of language and sound, a writer of sound. She is committed to the power of the human singing voice, of speaking truth to move society to just and liberating transformation. Through song and singing, she helps us deepen human consciousness and understand ourselves as part of a living planet. For over 3 decades, she has brought circles of women together to sing songs rooted in women's experiences. A social activist, she weaves together the spiritual and the political, integrating personal, social, planetary, and cosmic. I found her personal credo particularly appealing. And she says, "I often wonder what it would be like if we dared to love this life, the fragile and the vulnerable, the endangered, daring to be humble before the magnitude of our beginnings, daring to lean our species into a stubborn, pliant wonder until reverence shines in all that we do, until we live an economics of reverence, a theology of reverence, a politics of reverence, until it permeates education, development and healthcare, homes and relationships, arts and agriculture, a reverence for life, for planetary, social and personal wholeness." Interestingly, when I was doing the reading, I turned up a UU World article from 2007 in which she talks about being approached to include some of her hymns in the Singing in the Living Tradition book. And she was quite reluctant when they approached her, and she said, "I thought of them as a living prayer, not a hymn. I don't feel like a hymn writer." She speaks of her songs as being her teachers, and she specifically calls out "Come Sing a Song with Me" as an example. So reading from, again, from that 2007 article, it said, "Come Sing a Song with Me had a kind of a time-delayed teaching for her. In the 1980s, a chaplain of the Women's State Prison in Framingham, Massachusetts, asked her to come and do a music program. She brought the song mainly because it was easy to learn, but the prisoners sang it in a way she'd never heard before. She had to stop singing and listen. That song needed context. I'll give you hope when hope is hard to find. And they had the context to bring to it," she said. "It went from sweet to profound." And isn't that what the best music and hymns do for us? Move us from something sweet and enjoyable to something profound. So I hope this whistle-stop tour of some of the Unitarian hymns we hold dear has convinced you not only of the pleasure our songs bring us, but also of their importance in this community and in our wider lives. If I had longer, I would have gone on to explore the power of political songs, songs like Pete Seeger's We Shall Overcome, or Bella Ciao, or Nkosi Sikelel in Africa, or Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Feels to Be Free. But I'm sure you've all had experiences of marches and protests where you've seen the amazing, inspiring, unifying effect on a group of choosing to express themselves in song. Instead, I'm going to finish my hymn selection with one that I don't think will ever find a way into our services. It's called Son of Unclouded Righteousness and is described in Wikipedia as follows. A little known 1758 Christian hymn written by Charles Wesley, brother of John Wesley, the founder of Methodism. It was written as an intercessory prayer praying for the salvation of Muslims and a call for their conversion to Christianity. So given that description, I'm sure you're not surprised that I'm prefacing its words with a health warning. this is racist, it's Islamophobic. And I quote it to remind us of the words of Walt Whitman. Re-examine everything you have been told in school or in church or in any book and dismiss whatever insults your own soul. So the words of this hymn are, the smoke of the infernal cave, which half the Christian world o'erspread, disperse thou heavenly light, and save the souls that the impostor led, that Arab chief, a Satan bold, who quite destroyed thy Asian fold. O mighty, the blood of sprinkling cry, for those who spurn thy sprinkled blood, assert thy glorious deity, stretch out thine arm, thou triune God. The Unitarian fiend expel and chase his doctrine back to hell. Charming. As I approach the end of this address, I'd just like to say, I'm sure you'll all agree that we're particularly blessed with the musical aspects of our community, with Josh skillfully leading us through hymns old and new, carefully created to match each service's theme, the choir lifting us up and carrying us along through firm favourites and new arrangements, the many talented musicians we count as members of our community who bring their music to services, leading us into moments of reflection and painting us beautiful musical landscapes that gently lead us to contemplation. And I'd like you just to take a moment to join with me in thanking them for all the gifts they bring to our community. This community offers a sacred space, a held space for us to find our voice and sing our song. If we're very lucky, we find resonances and echoes in the words and songs of others here. Sometimes it's a harmony where all voices swell and rise as one. Sometimes there are moments that it feels more like jazz, where there's more of a complex rhythm and perhaps even a feeling of dissonance. But this is a place where we all have a voice and are encouraged to use it. There's a Swedish proverb which translates as, those who wish to sing always find a song. My wish for you is that you find your song, find your voice, and may its power carry you through even the toughest times. Namaste. We'll have our third hymn now, hymn 293, O Star of Truth and the Collection.
Thank you.
So our notices. Thank you to all who have contributed to today's service. To Ayla, thank you for preparing the church. Please join us downstairs for tea and coffee after the service. Sundays at 2 p.m. is led by the Classical Musicians Network, who meet here in the church and is organized by Shari. The third hour-long concert is happening on the 20th of July. Entry is free, but any donation you wish to make will go towards our restoration fund. For more information, please talk to Shari. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 to 1:35. After the service is tea and coffee. These sessions can also be accessed live on our webcam. In July, the book club is reading James by Percival Everett. The book club's next meeting is on Wednesday the 30th of July at 7:30 p.m. in the vestry. Please talk to Alison for details. The Unitarian Walkers' next walk is on Saturday the 12th of July. Frank Tracy will lead us on a walk around the Liberties. The walk will begin at 11 a.m. At the Four Courts Lewis stop. And the Ethan Fiddlers, showcasing the best of Scottish traditional music, will be here next Saturday for a free concert. There is a poster on the notice board for more details, and you're asked to book tickets on Eventbrite. Josh?
I have been inspired by Elaine's address there. Before the pandemic, but certainly before Bridget retired, we were in the middle of an ongoing series of sessions after church twice or three times a year, where we worked our way gradually through the hymn book, where we sang all the hymns one after the other, usually just one verse, maybe two if we were feeling particularly excited. And we sang the unfamiliar ones, we sang the familiar ones, and there's usually about five or six people there, including the minister. We discussed them, we discussed whether we liked them, whether we thought the congregation, we spoke on behalf of you all, of course, whether the congregation felt excited about persevering with any, or whether they should be just ditched. And some of them were just ditched, I promise you, many of them in fact. But we only got to hymn 350, I think, which means that there's about 100 left. And I just suddenly felt in the middle of that address there, we really should look at the other 100. So I'm going to fire that up again at some stage, and Gavin will join us. And I just thought I'd put it out there because I know lots of people knew about it, but also lots of people didn't know about it. So if anyone would like to be part of that, we'll figure out a Sunday after church. We only do 30 at a time, so it literally takes an hour or however long it takes to sing the 30, and then we all go home. It's not terribly taxing, but it's kind of fun as well. So anyway, anyone who is interested in joining us for that, please let me know and I'll let you know the date.
Our final hymn today is hymn 346, Come Sing a Song with Me, and I'm stepping away so I can sing it. Thank you very much. That's my favourite. My closing words. Plato said, every heart sings a song, incomplete until another heart whispers back. Those who wish to sing always find a song. At the touch of a lover, everyone becomes a poet. My hope and wish for you all here is that you find your song and find people who want to sing it with you. Amen.